Chapter 17 Beliefs and Opinions. Dr. Bruce Lipton began his scientific career as a cell biologist. He received his Ph.D. from the University of Virginia at Charlottesville before joining the Department of Anatomy at the University of Wisconsin's School of Medicine in 1973, where his research on muscular dystrophy focused on the molecular mechanisms controlling cell behavior. In 1982, Dr. Lipton began examining the principles of quantum physics and how they might be integrated into his understanding of the cell's information processing systems. In the process, he discovered that the brain of a cell is not in the nucleus, which is what I was taught in school, but in the membrane, the outer surface or skin of the cell. According to his website, his research at Stanford University's School of Medicine between 1987 and 1992 revealed that the environment, operating through the membrane, controlled the behavior and physiology of the cell. His discoveries, which ran counter to the established scientific view that life is controlled by the genes, gave rise to one of today's most important fields of study, the science of epigenetics. Many subsequent papers by other researchers have since validated his concepts and ideas. Epigenetics is to biology what quantum physics was to physics. It has turned our age-old understanding of biology upside down, or, as I've put it many times already, the opposite of what we have always believed is true. From epigenetics, we now know our perception of the environment controls our DNA, not the other way around. Bruce is a brilliant man and a good friend. Unfortunately, he still believes what's out there, the human body in particular, is real. But despite that, through his best-selling book, The Biology of Belief, and his live seminars called The Biology of Perception, he offers some very important insights into the effects of beliefs on our lives. For example, he says, how we see life determines our behavior, and since perceptions can be wrong, it is more accurate to say that beliefs control biology. What you believe creates your life. Unquote. The first example he offers is what is called the placebo effect. It is normally used as a medical term, meaning a patient is given something neutral, like a sugar pill, and yet it makes them feel better. There is no chemical reason in the placebo for it to have any effect at all on the body, but it does somehow. That somehow is because the patient believes it will, and nothing else. It is the patient's belief that changes their biology and their behavior. Bruce says, statistics reveal that 1/3 of all medical healings are the result of the placebo effect. But this placebo effect does not have to be limited to medicine or pills. In fact, it is in operation a lot of the time as we, the players, believe something, anything, is good for us that is actually neutral, and yet it makes us feel better. This, of course, is true for all homeopathic remedies as well. Homeopathy is still based on a belief that taking something from out there, natural though it might be, will have an effect in here. The other side of the coin, and not nearly as well known, is the nocebo effect. This is when a patient, or a player, believes something, anything, that is actually neutral is harmful to them, and it makes them feel bad or worse, when in fact there's nothing in the nocebo that can hurt them at all. According to Dr. Lipton, if a doctor tells you that you have a disease, or the doctor tells you that you're going to die, and you believe the doctor because he's a professional, the belief will give you a disease or will cause you to die. Unquote. The most famous nocebo currently may be HIV. According to Dr. Carrie Mullis, Nobel Prize winner in chemistry, there is not one scientific paper that proves HIV causes AIDS. Here's how Dr. Mullis explains it.
Good. I looked up a bunch of papers in science that Bob Gallo, I knew about him and had written. I figured, well, Gallo must have been the one to figure it out because he's the name I've heard associated with it. And I looked at his papers and I didn't find anything in there that actually showed me that there was a fact now in science called HIV is the cause of AIDS, or even the probable cause of AIDS, which is all I would have expected, the probable cause of AIDS. Highly probable, because they were attacking the whole problem by then as though it were certainly the cause. So I'd expect it to be highly probable, but I couldn't find anything that said it was remotely probable even.
Dr. Peter Duisberg, a member of the United States National Academy of Sciences and professor of molecular and cell biology at the University of California, Berkeley, was one of the world's leading retrovirologists who received acclaim early in his career for research on oncogenes and cancer. Dr. Duisberg says there's nothing about HIV that can do damage to a human body, that HIV is a, quote, harmless passenger virus, unquote. And according to the staff report of a U.S. Congressional subcommittee, the Office of Scientific Integrity of the National Institutes of Health, and the Office of Research Integrity of the Department of Health and Human Services, the man who first claimed that he discovered HIV and that HIV was the cause of AIDS was guilty of, quote, scientific misconduct, unquote, and his research was called, quote, of dubious merit, unquote, and, quote, really crazy, unquote. In fact, HIV fails every accepted scientific test to be called the cause of AIDS, and even the AIDS experts admit that more than half of those dying from AIDS today are dying from organ failure, mostly liver failure, as a side effect of the antiretroviral drugs they are encouraged to take, and not HIV. But if someone believes what we're being told by the mass media, that HIV causes AIDS and will result in death, then the stress caused by that belief is enough to destroy their immune system and give them AIDS, and they will die. According to Dr. Lipton, if you believe that something will be good for you, it will be good, and if you believe that something is harmful, it will be bad. End of quote. In both cases, the placebo and the nocebo, it is the player's belief and not the actual experience that controls their perceptions and determines their behavior. Dr. Lipton stresses the fact that a lot of our beliefs are learned from other people, and those learned beliefs can actually override our natural perceptions and instincts. For example, all babies know how to swim when they are born. But as they grow up and watch the reaction on their parents' faces whenever they get near water, the baby learns to be afraid of water. And then it needs to be taught how not to fear water and to swim again at the proper age when their parents are no longer afraid. Bruce likens our perception to a camera, taking snapshots of the physical world our brain has projected out there. But, he says, our beliefs act like filters on that camera, filtering out certain frequencies and changing the picture that comes in. And he offers a very good example of this during his workshops when he puts one slide on the screen that makes no real sense when you look at it, and then has the audience put on a pair of glasses he provides with green lenses and look at the picture. What they see is a nice picture with the word love on it. Then he has them trade the green lenses for glasses with red lenses and look at the same picture, and they see a scary picture with the word fear on it. In exactly the same way, Dr. Lipton concludes, our belief filters determine how we perceive our world and therefore how we react and respond to our experiences. He says, life has everything in it, but you will only see what you have belief filters to see. There is a classic psychology experiment where a red six of spades, along with other normal playing cards, is shown to a group of people who are writing down the cards they see. Many people cannot see a red six of spades the first few passes through the cards. Some can never see it as a red six of spades, even when holding it in their hands. The conclusion is that our beliefs can filter and affect what data comes in through our senses. We can end up seeing and hearing only what we believe. The stronger the belief system, the more powerful will be its ability to filter out data that contradicts those beliefs. You were taught and you believe that seeing is believing. It should be the other way around. You have come to understand that, metaphorically speaking, the eye is a camera that passively collects light and brings it in to record photographs of what is actually out there, with no alteration of the sense data going on. What I am proposing is that, in actuality, the reverse of that simple phrase is true. Believing is seeing. What I am proposing is that the eye is a camera that filters out most of the electromagnetic spectrum to only record visible light, and that the camera is controlled by the photographer who chooses consciously or unconsciously what to photograph. In this case, we start with a belief that a red six of spades doesn't exist, so it's difficult to see it for what it actually is, and for some with very strong and controlling belief systems, it's virtually impossible. I deliberated long and hard about whether to include this next example because it is so controversial, but it is also the most perfect example I can think of to illustrate how our beliefs affect what we perceive out there and prevent us from seeing what is, and how those beliefs can contribute to so much pain and suffering in our lives. Even if you are not a Christian, you probably know Jesus was crucified and died on a cross to rise again from the dead 3 days later. Over the last 2,000 years, many people have believed this and based their lives on it. Here is the scripture from the Holy Bible on which this belief is based. Even if you know this story already, please listen to it again now. From the Gospel of St. Luke, King James Version, beginning at chapter 23, verse 50. And behold, there was a man named Joseph. This man went unto Pilate and begged for the body of Jesus. And he took it down and wrapped it in linen and laid it in a sepulchre that was hewn in stone, wherein never man before was laid. And the woman also, which came with him from Galilee, followed after, and beheld the sepulchre, and how his body was laid. And they returned, and prepared spices and ointments, and rested the Sabbath day according to the commandment. Now upon the first day of the week, very early in the morning, they came unto the sepulchre, bringing the spices which they had prepared, and certain others with them. And they found the stone rolled away from the sepulchre. And they entered in, and found not the body of the Lord Jesus. And it came to pass, as they were much perplexed thereabout, behold, two men stood by them in shining garments. And as they were afraid, and bowed down their faces to the earth, they said unto them, Why seek ye him that liveth among the dead? He is not here, but is risen. Remember how he spake unto you when he was yet in Galilee, saying, The Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men, and be crucified, and the third day rise again. And they remembered his words, and returned from the sepulchre, and told all these things unto the 11, and to all the rest. It was Mary Magdalene, and Joanna, and Mary the mother of James, and other women that were with them, which told these things unto the apostles. And their words seemed to them as idle tales, and they believed them not. Then arose Peter, and ran unto the sepulchre, and stooping down, he beheld the linen clothes laid by themselves, and departed, wondering in himself at that which was come to pass. And behold, two of them went that same day to a village called Emmaus, which was from Jerusalem about 70 furlongs. And they talked together of all these things which had happened. And it came to pass that, while they communed together and reasoned, Jesus himself drew near and went with them. But their eyes were holden that they should not know him. And he said unto them, What manner of communications are these that ye have one to another, as ye walk and are sad? And the one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered, saying unto him, Art thou only a stranger in Jerusalem, and hast not known the things which are come to pass there in these days? And he said unto them, What things? And they said unto him, Concerning Jesus of Nazareth, which was a prophet, mighty in deed and word, before God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death, and have crucified him. But we trusted that it had been he which should have redeemed Israel. And beside all this, today is the third day since these things were done. Yea, and certain women also of our company made us astonished, which were early at the sepulchre. And when they found not his body, they came, saying that they had also seen a vision of angels, which said that he was alive. And certain of them which were with us went to the sepulchre, and found it even so, as the women had said. But him they saw not. And they drew nigh unto the village whither they went, and he made as though he would have gone further. But they constrained him, saying, Abide with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is far spent. And he went in to tarry with them. And it came to pass, as he sat at meat with them, he took bread, and blessed it, and brake, and gave it to them. And their eyes were opened, and they knew him, and he vanished out of their sight. And they said to one another, Did not our hearts burn within us, while he talked with us by the way, and while he opened to us the Scriptures? And they rose up the same hour, and returned to Jerusalem, and found the 11 gathered together, and them that were with them, saying, The Lord is risen indeed, and hath appeared to Simon. And they told what things were done in the way, and how he was known of them in breaking of bread. And as they thus spake, Jesus himself stood in the midst of them, and saith unto them, Peace be unto you. But they were terrified and affrighted, and supposed that they had seen a spirit. And he said unto them, Why are ye troubled? And why do thoughts arise in your hearts? Behold my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Handle me, and see, for a spirit hath not flesh and bones, as ye see me have. And when he had thus spoken, he showed them his hands and his feet. And while they yet believed not for joy, and wondered, he said unto them, Have ye here any meat? And they gave him a piece of broiled fish, and of a honeycomb. And he took it, and did eat before them. But what if this were actually the account of a man who was taken down from his cross after just 3 hours, still alive, where he was treated for the wounds on his hands and feet and head and side, survived, left 3 days later under his own steam, and met his disciples on the road as he was walking out of Jerusalem? In other words, I want to ask you to listen to the exact same Bible passages again without the prior belief that Jesus died on the cross. And behold, there was a man named Joseph. This man went unto Pilate and begged for the body of Jesus. And he took it down and wrapped it in linen and laid it in a sepulchre that was hewn in stone, wherein never man before was laid. And the woman also, which came with him from Galilee, followed after, and beheld the sepulchre, and how his body was laid. And they returned and prepared spices and ointments, and rested the Sabbath day according to the commandment. Now upon the first day of the week, very early in the morning, they came unto the sepulchre, bringing the spices which they had prepared, and certain others with them. And they found the stone rolled away from the sepulchre. And they entered in, and found not the body of the Lord Jesus. And it came to pass, as they were much perplexed thereabout, behold, two men stood by them in shining garments. And as they were afraid, and bowed down their faces to the earth, they said unto them, Why seek ye him that liveth among the dead? He is not here, but is risen. Remember how he spake unto you when he was yet in Galilee, saying, The Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men, and be crucified, and the third day rise again. And they remembered his words, and returned from the sepulchre, and told all these things unto the 11, and to all the rest. It was Mary Magdalene, and Joanna, and Mary the mother of James, and other women that were with them, which told these things unto the apostles. And their words seemed to them as idle tales, and they believed them not. Then arose Peter, and ran unto the sepulchre, and stooping down, he beheld the linen clothes laid by themselves, and departed, wondering in himself at that which was come to pass. And behold, two of them went that same day to a village called Emmaus, which was from Jerusalem about 80 furlongs. And they talked together of all these things which had happened. And it came to pass that, while they communed together and reasoned, Jesus himself drew near and went with them. But their eyes were holden that they should not know him. And he said unto them, What manner of communications are these that ye have one to another, as ye walk and are sad? And the one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered, saying unto him, Art thou only a stranger in Jerusalem, and hast not known the things which are come to pass there in these days? And he said unto them, What things? And they said unto him, Concerning Jesus of Nazareth, which was a prophet, mighty in deed and word, before God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death, and have crucified him. But we trusted that it had been he which should have redeemed Israel. And beside all this, today is the third day since these things were done. Yea, and certain women also of our company made us astonished, which were early at the sepulchre. And when they found not his body, they came, saying that they had also seen a vision of angels, which said that he was alive. And certain of them which were with us went to the sepulchre, and found it even so, as the women had said. But him they saw not. And they drew nigh unto the village whither they went, and he made as though he would have gone further. But they constrained him, saying, Abide with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is far spent. And he went in to tarry with them. And it came to pass, as he sat at meat with them, he took bread, and blessed it, and brake, and gave it to them. And their eyes were opened, and they knew him, and he vanished out of their sight. And they said to one another, Did not our hearts burn within us, while he talked with us by the way, and while he opened to us the Scriptures? And they rose up the same hour, and returned to Jerusalem, and found the 11 gathered together, and them that were with them, saying, The Lord is risen indeed, and hath appeared to Simon. And they told what things were done in the way, and how he was known of them in breaking of bread. And as they thus spake, Jesus himself stood in the midst of them, and saith unto them, Peace be unto you. But they were terrified and affrighted, and supposed that they had seen a spirit. And he said unto them, Why are ye troubled? And why do thoughts arise in your hearts? Behold my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Handle me and see, for a spirit hath not flesh and bones, as ye see me have. And when he had thus spoken, he showed them his hands and his feet. And while they yet believed not for joy, and wondered, he said unto them, Have ye here any meat? And they gave him a piece of broiled fish, and of a honeycomb. And he took it, and did eat before them. Behold my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Handle me, and see, for a spirit hath not flesh and bones, as you see me have. I cannot imagine how that could be any clearer. Jesus is saying he's alive, that this was his actual physical body, not a spirit, and to prove it, he ate meat with them. There are even more telling phrases in the other Gospels. In the Gospel of St. Matthew, for example, chapter 28, starting at verse 5, And the angel answered and said unto the women, Fear not ye, for I know that ye seek Jesus, which was crucified. He is not here, for he is risen, as he said. Come, see the place where the Lord lay, and go quickly, and tell his disciples that he is risen from the dead, and behold, he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him. And Matthew chapter 28, starting at verse 10, Then said Jesus unto them, Be not afraid. Go tell my brethren that they go into Galilee, and there shall they see me. Then the 11 disciples went away into Galilee, into a mountain where Jesus had appointed them. And when they saw him, they worshipped him. A resurrected body would not need to go before anyone else to any place. It would just appear there spontaneously. Nor would it need to tell anyone to go someplace to see it. The Gospel of St. Mark says, at chapter 15, beginning verse 43, Joseph of Arimathea, an honorable counselor, which also waited for the kingdom of God, came and went in boldly unto Pilate, and craved the body of Jesus. And Pilate marveled if he were already dead. The synonym for marvel is wonder. Pilate wondered how Jesus could be dead, because he had only been on the cross for 3 hours, and crucifixions normally would take a lot longer than that to kill someone. According to the Wikipedia, the Romans used crucifixion as a prolonged, agonizing, humiliating death. It is possible to survive crucifixion, if not prolonged, and there are records of people who did. And, in Mark chapter 16, starting at verse 1, And when the Sabbath was past, Mary Magdalene, and Mary the mother of James, and Salome, had bought sweet spices, that they might come and anoint him. To anoint means to smear or rub with oil or an oily substance, which even today is a common medical treatment for the wounds of a body that is still alive. And in Mark chapter 16, starting at verse 9, Now when Jesus was risen early the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had cast 7 devils. And she went and told them that she had been with him, as they mourned and wept. And they, when they had heard that he was alive, and had been seen of her, believed not. After that he appeared in another form unto 2 of them, as they walked and went into the country. And they went and told it unto the residue, neither believed they them. And when they heard that he was alive, how can that be misunderstood? And Mark chapter 16, verse 14, Afterward he appeared unto the 11 as they sat at meat, and upbraided them with their unbelief and hardness of heart, because they believed not them which had seen him after he was risen. And in the Gospel of St. John, chapter 19, verse 39, And there came also Nicodemus, which at first came to Jesus by night, and brought a mixture of myrrh and aloes. Nicodemus was a wealthy and popular holy man, reputed to have had miraculous powers. Myrrh and aloes were not just used for embalming, but as medicine for wounds. Myrrh is currently used in some liniments and healing salves that may be applied to abrasions and other minor skin ailments. In alternative medicine, it is said that mixing myrrh gum into vinegar increases its ability to relieve pain. The Greeks and Romans used aloes to treat wounds, as we also do today. And in the Gospel of John, chapter 20, verse 6, "Then cometh Simon Peter, following him, and went into the sepulchre, and seeth the linen clothes lie, and the napkin that was about his head, not lying with the linen clothes, but wrapped together in a place by itself." The cloth around Jesus' head, where he had wounds from the thorny crown, was in a different place than the rest. Not likely if his body resurrected and left his linen clothes lying there. And finally, in John chapter 20, verse 19, "Then the same day at evening, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews, came Jesus and stood in the midst, and saith unto them, Peace be unto you. And when he had so said, he showed unto them his hands and his side. Then were the disciples glad when they saw the Lord." I need to add that it's quite likely Jesus' disciples really thought he had died on the cross, so I can understand their astonishment to find out he didn't. But even the Bible, when read without any prior belief, is quite clear that Jesus survived his crucifixion. For 2,000 years, Christianity has been based on the belief Jesus died on the cross, many say for our sins, and rose again from the dead. Think of the impact this one belief has had on the world and on many of us personally. Wars have been fought, millions have died, and millions more have lived lives of guilt and shame based on this belief. But there is ample evidence this belief is not true, and even the Bible does not say it happened that way unless you read the Gospels with that belief already in place, and then you still have to make some very big assumptions. Remember Occam's razor, that the best answer is the one with the fewest assumptions. So we start with a judgment that we are all, as human beings, innately defective. The Roman Catholic Church calls it original sin. We form a belief, despite the evidence, that a Son of God has been resurrected from the dead in order to save us from our sinful nature. And we are of the opinion that anyone who doesn't believe in him cannot make it into heaven. It makes for a very interesting game. Here's another quick example of how this judgment-belief-opinion cycle happens. Let's say you judge prostitution to be wrong, for whatever reason. You then form a belief that the government should do something to stop it, and you hold the opinion that any man or woman who engages in prostitution is acting immorally. And let's say your infinite eye creates an experience for you in your cocoon where you come face to face with this, such as your husband or wife or lover or son or daughter or good friend, someone you love and respect and admire, gets arrested on charges of prostitution, either soliciting or selling sex for money. I can imagine this might cause you some discomfort, severe discomfort if it were your husband or wife, I'm sure. So this is your chance to run Robert's process first, to take the heat and discomfort and reality out of the situation, and then run Jed's spiritual autolysis to discover the false belief, false information, and layers of ego that resulted from this judgment. Most of the time, you can simply follow the discomfort, the emotion or pain, for example, to uncover the judgment. In this example, it should be fairly easy to find the underlying judgment, that you consider prostitution to be wrong, and to use spiritual autolysis to ask, is that true? But sometimes it's not that easy. The judgment is not so readily available, buried more deeply, hiding from your awareness. So instead, you can follow the emotion to find the belief, and then follow the belief to find the judgment. Or, if the belief is also hard to get at, follow the emotion to find the opinion, then follow the opinion to find the belief, then follow the belief to find the judgment. You get the picture. Remember what Jed McKenna said, all attachments to the dream state are made of energy. That energy is called emotion. All emotions, positive and negative, are attachments. End of quote. So consider every emotion you have that is less than total joy, excitement, and enthusiasm to be a signpost, a red flag leading you to your opinions, beliefs, and judgments. In fact, you can do this for any opinion or belief at any time, without needing your infinite eye to create a catalytic experience for you. If you hear yourself offering an opinion, any opinion, look for the belief that led you to that opinion, then look deeper for the judgment that led to the belief. Remember that all judgments, beliefs, and opinions were formed inside the movie theater and are based on incorrect premises, so they are all untrue. This may be difficult for some people to accept who have become very attached to their opinions with multiple layers of ego for each one piled on top of each other. But it is exactly these attachments and letting go of them that are the point of this whole process in the cocoon. Okay, you might say, I can see living without judgments. I can even imagine living without beliefs. But living without opinions? Isn't that kind of boring? Do you just accept anything and everything that is put in front of you in your hologram without question or discrimination? Yes and no. Yes, you accept anything and everything that is put in front of you, since your infinite eye created anything and everything for you it wants you to experience, down to the smallest detail. It's true I no longer live with judgments and beliefs and opinions, except those occasional times when one might pop up for me to identify and process. But no, life is far from boring, and I do have my preferences. Jed McKenna started off book two of his Enlightenment trilogy saying, I hate L.A. I never could figure out whether Jed was expressing a judgmental opinion or just using some literary license for effect. I don't hate anything, but I prefer a lot of things. What's the difference? It can be very subtle and tricky at times, but I'll try to explain. An opinion, based on a belief and judgment, includes resistance to the opposite opinion. A preference has no resistance, but is merely an expression of choice. I prefer not to play tic-tac-toe, unless I am engaged with a very young child. I find the game very boring for me, since it's unwinnable when playing with anyone who has even the slightest clue of what's up. Now that I know a game like backgammon exists, I prefer to play it instead. I have no resistance to playing tic-tac-toe, no judgment about it, no beliefs about it, no opinions about it as a game. I just prefer not to play it under most circumstances. Likewise, I prefer not to play the judgment game, the belief game, the opinion game, the fear game, the first half of the human game inside the movie theater. I have no resistance to playing any of it if the appropriate circumstances were to arise, and it was clear my infinite eye was creating that for my experience at the moment. And I have no judgment about it, no beliefs about it, no opinions about it, other than how perfect a game it was at one stage of my metamorphosis, and how perfect it is for other people who still want to play it. But I also prefer not to spend a lot of time with people who are playing the first half of the human game. I enjoy living in a way that I'm not surrounded with the constant noise of other people's drama and conflict. I prefer not to talk about tic-tac-toe. I prefer not to listen to tic-tac-toe players who spend the vast majority of their time talking about the game, rehashing prior games they played, accusing someone of cheating in a game they seem to have lost, describing in detail how much of a victim they are when they lose, or even discussing new strategies of how to win a game that's unwinnable. But I don't judge them. In fact, I totally support them to continue doing exactly what they're doing. I just don't find it at all interesting or fun to be part of that myself. I prefer silence to the sound of motorcycle engines. I prefer not to drink alcohol because of the way it makes me feel. I prefer to sail than motorboat. I prefer to eat protein and vegetables rather than carbohydrates. I prefer warm weather to cold, sun to snow, the beach to the mountains, and less or no clothes to more. I prefer watching a movie to small talk, a concert to a cocktail party, a solitary walk listening to good music in my earphones to a dinner party. I prefer diving 40 feet deep in the ocean to walking on land. Those would be my choices if I could choose. But I will be wherever my infinite eye wants me to be and experience whatever my infinite eye wants me to experience with full joy and without hesitation or judgment or resistance, because I totally trust my infinite eye, and that is my job as its player in the human game. I would caution especially those who are new to their cocoon to be very wary of this opinion preference thing. Judgments are sometimes hard enough to spot for processing without making it any harder, and it seems so easy to say, "I prefer not to be around that kind of person," and think it's a statement of preference when in fact it's a statement of judgment. I found it a lot easier in the beginning to simply assume that any preference I wanted to express was in reality an opinion based on a judgment and belief, and process it accordingly. After about a year, when I was more comfortable with letting go of my judgments and beliefs and opinions, when I felt fairly secure I could spot when my ego was trying to slip something by on me, I allowed myself to have preferences again. But I remain very vigilant and still challenge my preferences on a regular basis to make sure I'm not resisting anything, for resistance is the key.